I'm Joan Stevenson, editor of JAMA's Medical News and Perspective section. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Josh Metlay about community-acquired pneumonia, a common condition worldwide and a significant cause of illness and death. Dr. Metlay, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hello, I'm Josh Metlay. I'm an associate professor of medicine and epidemiology at the University of Pennsylvania.
Dr. Metlay, what do we know about the prevalence of community-acquired pneumonia, and are there important demographic characteristics?
Pneumonia is a relatively common infection overall. It actually occurs about 5% incidence in adults over the age of 80, so 1 in 20 adults in the oldest age groups will come down with community-acquired pneumonia each year, and it leads to over a million hospitalizations in this country alone, and globally it's a major issue. On the other hand, if one looks at all of the patients who walk into a physician's office or into an emergency department with some type of a respiratory infection, it's not the most common diagnosis. In fact, it's relatively uncommon amongst all illnesses that cause cough kinds of symptoms. So most people would estimate that somewhere in the range of about 3 to 10% of patients who are presenting with an acute respiratory infection will actually have a diagnosis of community-acquired pneumonia. That prevalence or that probability goes up steeply as we go up in the age groups, particularly over 60 into the 70s and 80s. But still, one of the challenges with pneumonia is identifying a relatively uncommon diagnosis amongst a large number of patients with a common set of symptoms.
Which symptoms increase the probability that a patient has community-acquired pneumonia?
There really aren't any symptoms that have very good positive predictive value. Largely, that's because we don't really entertain the diagnosis of pneumonia in patients who don't have some of the key symptoms, in particular cough. So most of what we know about pneumonia is in studying patients who present with a cough. So you could say that cough is a strong predictor of pneumonia, but in fact, we rarely go looking for pneumonia in patients who aren't coughing. There are some symptoms that have a sort of negative predictive value because they tend to lead us to other diagnoses that might be associated with cough illness. So, for example, nasal congestion or rhinorrhea or earache. But collectively, I think most people feel that symptoms alone are poor positive and negative predictors of community-acquired pneumonia.
Which history and physical examination findings are helpful when detecting community-acquired pneumonia, and which findings are not helpful?
The most helpful findings in all studies, when you look at them collectively, are vital signs. And so there's, I think, very good evidence that in a patient who has normal vital signs, and I'll review what those are in a minute, the probability of pneumonia is very low. Now, this is partly reflecting the fact that, as I already said, pneumonia is a relatively uncommon diagnosis amongst all patients who come in with a cough illness. But if you then add to that the fact that the patient has a normal temperature, a normal respiratory rate, a normal heart rate, then the probability of pneumonia is really quite low, some would say in the range of 1 to 2%. And that's probably a range in which we can begin to talk about ruling out the diagnosis. The presence of individual vital sign abnormalities, so say a fever or tachycardia or tachypnea, do increase the probability of pneumonia, but really only slightly. The more abnormal vital signs, the higher the probability of pneumonia. But again, the probabilities are still probably not getting above the 20 to 30% range for someone having pneumonia. So the vital sign abnormalities that I tend to rely on, particularly for ruling out pneumonia, would be a respiratory rate of under 20, temperature that's less than 38.0 Celsius or 100.4, and a heart rate under 100. And so when we refer to normal vital signs as supporting the exclusion of pneumonia diagnosis, those are the typical cut points I think that most people would use. If when we're trying to rule in the diagnosis, then clearly greater levels of abnormality in the vital sign have better positive predictive value, but again, are rarely predictive enough to rule in the diagnosis. The other physical examination findings that people look at are pulmonary examination findings. So in particular, crackles on auscultation, dullness to percussion, are findings that are clearly more common in patients with pneumonia than without pneumonia. And many decision rules that combine vital signs also include pulmonary exam findings, in particular crackles, as a positive finding that raises your probability of pneumonia. If you wrap this all up together and you had a patient sort of classically presenting with vital sign abnormalities and findings on pulmonary exam, so crackles asymmetric in one area of the lung fields, given the relatively low probability of pneumonia at the start, the post-test probability, if you will, given all those findings of someone having pneumonia, is probably in the range of around 50%. So I think it's important for people to know that it's really hard to rule in the diagnosis of pneumonia, even when you have what we might consider a classic presentation from a history and physical exam finding. But it is possible to rule out the diagnosis when you have somebody, the absence of those findings, and I think can then safely dismiss that diagnosis from your list.
What are the reference standard tests for community-acquired pneumonia?
Historically, we've relied on chest radiography as the way to identify patients with and without pneumonia, but we know that it's an imperfect gold standard. In studies which have compared chest radiography to high-resolution chest CT scanning in patients who have symptoms consistent with community-acquired pneumonia, there probably are about 20% of cases that are missed on chest radiography that can be identified on chest CT. So we might put the chest X-ray sensitivity at around 80%. It's not entirely clear whether those missed episodes of pneumonia have a lot of clinical meaning, should they or should they not, for example, be treated with antibacterial drugs. But it is a concerning issue, and I think one that we're particularly concerned about in patients who otherwise appear ill, particularly older adults, who may not have clear findings on chest X-ray consistent with the diagnosis of pneumonia, but for whom we're still concerned that there may be a serious illness underlying. In those patients, there's some consideration to repeat the chest radiograph within 24 to 48 hours, because in some cases, the pneumonia which was not apparent on chest X-ray initially can be more apparent on a follow-up film.
Is there anything else that JAMA evidence users should know about community-acquired pneumonia?
So I think that the paradox here is that our physical exam and ability to discern the diagnosis are best at actually ruling out the diagnosis. But the medical decision that we're trying to make, which is whether to treat the patient or not with antibiotics, is sort of easier on the side of ruling in the diagnosis. So by that I mean most physicians are more comfortable giving an antibiotic than not giving an antibiotic if they're considering the diagnosis of pneumonia. And so we have a tendency here to overcall the diagnosis of pneumonia when in fact the physical exam and history really don't ever get you to a point where you're really quite sure that the patient has pneumonia. The point I'd like to leave the listeners with is that the history and physical examination is actually quite good for ruling out the diagnosis of community-acquired pneumonia. And I think in most cases what that should mean to people is that a patient has a respiratory infection that does not require antibiotic therapy. There probably are some caveats here. I think in old adults we should always be suspicious of a diagnosis of community-acquired pneumonia. We know that symptoms are less pronounced in older adults. And so in an older adult who appears not well at all, we should still keep that diagnosis there. And if we're not going to treat for pneumonia initially, I would at least consider some early interval follow-up, perhaps with a repeat chest radiograph. On the other hand, I think it's important to recognize that even in the classic presentation, somebody with cough, productive of dark-colored sputum, and vital sign and physical examination findings, the probability that the patient has pneumonia is still only about 50%, which is, quite frankly, like a coin flip. And so I think it's really important in managing patients with community-acquired pneumonia that additional confirmatory tests are done before you diagnose someone with pneumonia. Lastly, I would say that there are some new tests that are on the horizon. There's a lot of interest right now in the use of acute phase reactants, initially in C-reactive protein and now more recently with procalcitonin. And I do think these tests have the potential for really increasing our ability at the bedside to make accurate diagnoses for this condition.
For those interested in learning about procalcitonin, see the article Effect of Procalcitonin-Based Guidelines versus Standard Guidelines on Antibiotic Use in Lower Respiratory Tract Infections, the PRO-HOSP Randomized Controlled Trial, which was published in the September 9, 2009 issue of JAMA, as well as a follow-up letter by Dr. Metlay, which was published in the February 3, 2010 issue of JAMA. Thank you, Dr. Metlay, for this overview of community-acquired pneumonia. For more information about this topic, JAMA Evidence subscribers can consult the online chapter on community-acquired pneumonia in the Rational Clinical Examination, including updated information co-authored by Dr. Metlay. This has been Joan Stevenson of JAMA interviewing Dr. Josh Metlay about community-acquired pneumonia for JAMA Evidence.